I'm sorry that my phone is out. I didn't have time to write my notes down on paper, so I wrote them on my notes app. But I appreciate those that are resisting the urge to check their phone constantly. I am familiar with that, so I appreciate that in advance.
New rules this year.
I see some phones.
Right, they can't have phones in front of them anytime.
I'm sorry that I'm breaking that rule. Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Feldman. Rishus, Rabbi Feldman, Shlita. Like you heard, my name is Ari. This is a very special place to me. I spent 2 years being the night sitter, Rebbe, here, and very much not just serving as a faculty member, a teacher here, but really believing very strongly in what's going on here. You've only been here a couple weeks, right? I'm sure in just a couple weeks you could already tell there's something special and unique that's going on here that you get to be a part of, and that appreciation hopefully will only grow. It's very hard to properly appreciate something when you have it, but I hope you understand that what you're going to be able to learn here, both in the base medrash and out, is completely unique and extraordinary. So I hope you all take advantage of that. So, like you heard, I do a bunch of things. I'm a therapist and I see clients on the side. I'm a musician. Every once in a while I go to a yeshiva or a seminar and I play their Purim Chagiga or their Hanukkah party or whatever. I work in a high-tech company helping design mobile apps. I'm a rabbi in a university. Sometimes I'm a father. And when you're in that multifaceted lifestyle, so the world is your base medrash. The experiences that you go through every day are your morning seder and your night seder, and they're your musar shmuz, and they're your halacha seder. You have to learn from life. Unless you're just not paying attention and you just walk through. But if you're paying attention, then there's someone giving you, teaching you a lesson wherever you go, wherever you are. And this time of year, I'm sure you've been hearing the highest quality shiurim and learning in depth from your teachers. And I want to give you a bit of a different angle. I want to talk to you from outside of the base medrash a bit and give you a little glimpse of the lessons learned from life that can hopefully help us understand how to properly navigate this time of year. This time of year being the time of tshuva. We're only days away from Rosh Hashanah, from Yom HaDin, a day of judgment, and then we get to Yom Kippur. What exactly do we do with this time? So I want to bring up my family life, my kids. I find that I learn the most about myself, not only from my kids, but through dealing with my children. And that's not a stage that none of you are at that stage, right? Good. At the right time. You're not at that stage yet, but I'm sure you've been a kid before and you've had kids go in and out of your life, so you could understand what I'm about to say. See, kids are extraordinary, interesting creatures. Their whole life is trying to discover and learn what's going on here. What am I? And what is all of this? Everything is a first. Everything is a, okay, oh, that's how that works. That's what I should do. Ooh, I shouldn't touch that. Ooh, I should try and climb that. Ooh, that doesn't taste good. Ooh, that tastes great. Get lots of that. Everything is a discovery process. And when we get a little older, even 18 years old, we kind of get jaded and we kind of feel like we know what we're doing or we have a bit of a handle on it, and that discovery and that newness, that freshness can wear off and can feel like it's not there anymore. Like I kind of know what I am or what I want, and now I just need to feel good about it or find it or whatever. But what I learned, like I said, what I learned from my kids is that we're not too different than kids, or at least we shouldn't be. We could learn a lot from kids about how to truly change about how to truly become someone that we want to be, ironically. I'll give you an example. I have a son, he's 5 years old, he's named Yosef. He's the middle kid, very sensitive because he wants to be like the older kids, and he's not, but he's older than the little kids, so he kind of has an extra bit of time, a bit of a challenge discovering who he is, and sometimes that leads to sensitive situations. So something I'll hear from him often is him running to me, really upset, saying, "Abba, Yitzchak called me," Yitzchak's his brother, "Yitzchak called me a horse. He said, I'm a horse." I said, "Yosef, are you a horse?" He said, "No." So I said, "Then you probably don't have much to worry about." He's like, "But he called me a horse." I said, "But you're not a horse. You're Yosef." He's like, "I know." So I said, "So he said you're a horse." And it will be on and on. Yitzchak called me a girl. Yitzchak said, "I'm wearing a skirt." "Are you wearing a skirt?" "No, you're wearing pajama pants." So then it's not a problem, right? So for adults, for people, this is a silly interaction. But he was having to figure out, what am I? He's telling me that I'm a horse. And that bothers me because I'm pretty sure I'm not a horse. But then why is he telling me that? It must mean that I am in some way a horse. Like, it bothered him almost to the point that he didn't know who he was anymore. And I'm not even joking about that, even though it sounds silly. It made him question, like, wait, what am I? Why is he calling me that? And I realized that silly interaction, maybe because it happens like twice a day, that this happens to us all the time. That people send us little, either it's subtle or it's in a click or it's in a text message or it's anything, that someone kind of says something about us or to us, whether it's on purpose or not or whether it's in passing or not, and we kind of wonder, wait, am I that? Do I need to be that? How do I make sure I'm that? Or how do I make sure I'm not that? And we almost need some parent figure of ours or someone with sense to say, wait, you're you, right? You're not what anyone else says. You get to be you. And if someone calls you something else, it doesn't matter at all. Now, this message isn't about Lashon Hara. This message isn't about peer pressure. It's about defining yourself. I told you I'm a therapist. I see clients all the time that are suffering from various degrees of problems, some diagnosable problems, some relationship problems, some just life is hard problems. And I took a great piece of advice from a very respected therapist, a man named Irving Yalom. He wrote a small book called The Gift of Therapy. It's an amazing book. If anyone of you are thinking of looking into psychology, therapy, check out that book. It's like short, easy to read. Irving Yalom, Y-A-L-O-M. He says, I wait as long as I can to diagnose people. Usually when we go to a doctor or a psychiatrist or even a therapist, the goal is to figure out as fast as we can what's wrong with me and then put whatever you can in or onto my body to fix it. That's usually the process that we're used to when we go to someone like a doctor. But he said that process, when it comes to the mind, when it comes to the heart, is flawed, because the way to understand what someone is going through, what someone truly is to get to know them, to learn them. You have to be able to understand them, and that only happens over time. You're the least equipped to understand someone when you first meet them, in one visit, in two visits. So to try and diagnose someone in your first meeting or your second meeting is silly, the way a doctor usually does for us. But he also said that it creates a problem in the patient, in the client, because they start to believe as soon as possible that they have this thing that's wrong with them, and they define themselves by it. And then they're not them, they're this issue, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whatever it is, they're that. And it's almost as if whatever help they can get won't define them as someone else, because they've already diagnosed themselves as this. So he says, I stay away from diagnosing. And I think we could use a little dose of that lesson of not listening to people calling us a horse. Because if we're going to do tshuva, if we're going to do this thing called change, called returning, called finding our true self, peeling away the layers or the excess in our life, so then we need to stop paying attention to what exactly we are or what label we've been given or even the label we've given ourselves. I'm this amount of frum and I'm not more and I'm not less, right? These types of things. It makes it easier for us to say, I'm able to be a little different. I'm able to be a little better. I'm able to take this part of my life a little more seriously if it matters to me. Because I'm, what I am now has it's important, but if what I want to be is something else, so then why am I stuck defining myself by what I am now? So I take my kids to school every morning. I am one of the lucky parents that decided my kids should go to a school in a different city, which is not something that goes on in this country often, because every city has usually schools for the kids in that school. But we found one that we like, and it involves driving through one of the busiest cities in this region called Bnei Brak, where every street has some sort of garbage truck or two cars that somehow backed directly into each other, so no one could go either way. Stuff like that. And one day, it was like the third day of school this year, there was terrible traffic, and I unfortunately got my kids like a few minutes late to school, and they were bugging out because they think like the world's going to end if they come to school 5 minutes late. Of course, like, get to junior high, and you're like begging to come 5 minutes late, right? And then the next day comes, and like, we're just getting in the car seatbelts, and I hear in the back seat, oof, oh, we're going to be late. I said, like, engine isn't even on, Tehila, 6-year-old. She worries a lot. Oof. It's that word, oof. Like, oof, we're going to be late. Ugh. I'm like, we didn't even get out of the parking lot. We're driving. She's like, I know it. I just, ugh, we're at a red light. I'm like, red lights are how traffic goes. That's natural. That's normal. We're good. And she couldn't get it in her head that today was gonna might be different than yesterday. She witnessed yesterday. It went all wrong. She got to school 5 minutes late. It was after the second bell, Ava. The second bell. And I said, why is today going to be the same as yesterday? Explain it to me. She said, well, yesterday we were late. I said, yeah, but today is today. And today we got there 5 minutes early. So now the next day is kind of interesting, because what do you do with day three, right? What happens day three? What do you think?
You're on time.
No, when we're not leaving yet, what is the mentality of Tehila, the warrior? Oof, we're going to be late. I could feel it. I'm like, that's not even good logic, Tehila, because it's perfectly 50-50 right now. But when you feel that something happened a certain way, and you feel that that somehow defines how the future is going to be, you can't undo that out of your brain. You feel it was a certain way, and that's the way it is. And I spent days trying to think of different ways of getting this message into her head that it's going to be different as I was bringing her early. Because again, the evidence wasn't enough. I talked about how Hashem creates the world completely new every single day. Mechadesh betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishit. She's like, what, you mean all the animals in the world just created today? I said, yeah, it's kind of like they're created, but they're the same thing. They're created. So it's a whole, anything new can happen. It's like, so we could be in outer space tomorrow? It got complicated. But it was a lesson to me, and when I was getting frustrated, and when we get frustrated about being the same person, or feeling like this isn't going to work because it didn't work in the past. Feeling like I'm kind of it. This is who I am. Tshuva, okay, I could cry, I could be serious for a davening or two, I could get in the right mood for a week, But I am who I am, and I know who I am, and I know who my mom wants me to be when I show up, when she shows up, and I know who... I'm perfectly this. And we need to take a lesson from our kids, or from kids. That we don't need to define ourselves by yesterday. We should start defining ourselves by tomorrow. See, the one constant thing about kids is change. It's the only thing that's always, always happening. Their shoe size is always changing. Their taste in food, for some reason, is always changing. Schnitzel, best food in the world. Next week, hate schnitzel. Love yogurt. Great, yogurt's the best. Great, no. Hate yogurt, pizza, only pizza. Always changing. Last week, my son came home. He was sitting next to his friend Ariel in school. They got into a bit of an argument. The teacher got mad at them. He came home and he said to my wife, "You need to call Ariel's mother and tell him that he can never sit next to me again. I'm never going to be his friend." And she said, "I'm not going to call your friend's mom about that." But he was very adamant that that's what needs to happen. If not, then I'm going to go to the Minahelet and I'm going to tell her that. And the next day, I mean, we had a, at night, I had a real discussion with my wife about it. It sounds like something real happened. We weren't there. Maybe something serious is happening. Maybe there's a real beef there. This is third grade. The next day, he comes home, and my wife said, "You know, Yitzchak, how'd it go with Arya?" He's like, "Oh, we're friends." I was like, "What? You were about to, like, excommunicate him from, you were about to revoke his citizenship yesterday. And today you're friends and you're sitting next to each other." Change is the most consistent thing of being a kid. And we're afraid of it. We're afraid of change because it's unfamiliar to us. Because we're scared of what life is going to be like in that new state. I could give you another example. I had a client who was suffering badly from anxiety. It made it harder for her to do regular things like get up and go to school. And change is one of the most difficult things for someone who suffers from a diagnosed illness of anxiety, because change is for even a regular person is, what if something goes wrong? What if I'm not ready for what's going to happen? What if it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, which is what the mind of someone with anxiety is saying to themselves all day about anything. And this person, all of her roommates moved out of her apartment, so she needed to find new roommates, but in the end she ended up finding a different apartment that had different roommates, and she was extremely nervous. In one day she had to move all of her stuff, and she was going to have all new roommates, and she didn't even know which room in the apartment she was going to have. And I legitimately felt like, "What? How am I going to help this person? Like, this is really stressful." Now, the one detail I didn't tell you was that for several weeks now, most of the time that we were talking was about how terrible her roommates are. One of them is a mess. The other one brings shady people over and they stay for days at a time. The third one is really loud. The fourth one I'm scared of. She scares me. And I was trying to help her navigate her personal space, her personal life. And that's, again, separate from anxiety. That's just shady roommates. And I said, "Okay, let me get this straight. You're in a situation where you would probably be very excited to leave your four whack roommates the minute you could. And now you have the ability to leave your four silly roommates." We'll use an easier word.
That's my word.
Silly.
We're in a good way.
Four roommates. And now you could leave those roommates and live in a new place where the odds of someone being as crazy as that are probably low. And yet what's occupying your mind is, "Well, what if this all goes wrong?" I said, if you just took a second and said, well, I'm about to transition out of a bad thing and into a new thing, I wouldn't be as worried about it. I wouldn't be as fearful of the results, because I could be confident that what I'm going towards is an improvement on what I was. And the fear is really in the change itself. The fear is, what am I going to be? What is my life going to be when I get there? And I had to convince her that what she was scared of was simply the act of not being where she was, even though where she was something she was desperately looking to get out of. So if you'll notice, there's a bit of a theme. And the theme is that when it comes to making a change, often what holds us back is our mentality, our mindset. Am I capable of being someone different? Am I too scared of redefining myself in some way? What are other people going to call me? Are people going to call me a horse? None of that has to do with the actual practical steps of making a change. All of it exists in your mind and in your heart. Can I think more? Can I place my thoughts more on tomorrow than on yesterday? Can I care more about who I'm becoming than who I have been? And work towards that. And that's the beauty of tshuva. Because the beauty of tshuva, the message of tshuva, is nothing's holding you back. There's no obstacle when it comes to tshuva. Tshuva is simply a decision that you make. Sure, there's a difficult process that goes on internally of evaluating in an honest and raw and open way. Wait, am I good? Am I okay with who I am? And if I'm not, what exactly needs to change? That's not a comfortable situation. That's not a comfortable process. But it's all internal. There's no one and nothing that can limit your ability to change, that can get in the way of you becoming who you need to become. And what's scary is that that's often a bigger obstacle ourselves than if it was just something else externally that we could look at, that we could see, that we could deal with. I went through a very big change in my life the past few years. So yeah, until around a year and change ago, I was more or less defined as a rabbi. That's who I was. Anyone who saw me, walked by me across the street, knew me. I was the rabbi at Bar Ilan. I taught here. I taught at some other places here and there. I was Ravari. That's who I was. And for reasons we don't need to go into now, it became clear that there needed to be a change in my life. Probably the best thing that happened to me was that I didn't really have a choice. I had to do it. So I didn't need to fist fight with myself in my head. Should I? Shouldn't I? I needed to. And it was a matter of how to do it successfully. And I transitioned into a place where I had a life where I was working for a company in Tel Aviv. There are 80 plus people in the company, and there is me and one other guy that's religious. That's a very different world. And then there's this other part of me where I'm a rabbi, and those people still know who I am and deal with me that way. And I had to redefine myself. I had to say, okay, I know I was Mr. Full-Time Rabbi, but now I kind of need to define who I am a little differently. And what's interesting is that after I did that, there are at least a dozen other people since then that have called me saying, I heard you were a rabbi and you made this transition, you changed. I'm really nervous. I don't know what to do. I've never been a non-rabbi before. Can you give me some advice? And all the advice that I would tell them was, it's your choice. There's nothing beyond what's behind your eyes, what's in between your ears, that can hold you back from becoming who you need to become. It's a choice. If you choose you want to be a certain way, you can be a certain way. And that fear that we have of not knowing what it is or where we're going to end up is often what holds us back. I want to give you one or two more short stories and examples, and then hopefully we can come away with some practical advice of how to succeed at this time of year. There's a guy named Brian Allen. He lived in the 60s and 70s, and he wanted to try and break a very obscure record and become famous for doing something kind of strange, which was fly across the English Channel. English Channel is a body of water. Many people swim it. Not many people, it's far, but there's a famous thing to swim the English Channel. He wanted to fly the English Channel. Now, flying the English Channel is not a big deal because planes can take you all over the world. But what he wanted to do was fly over the English Channel using a man-made, self-propelled airplane. No engine, no metal, just styrofoam and cardboard and wood that he put together, that he would literally pedal using his feet into the air across a body of water. I don't know what happened in his head one day when he woke up and said, this is what I'm going to do with my life. That was his choice. And it got a big crowd, and there was a news channel or two that wanted to cover it because it seemed like a kind of a good story. And it was one of those, like, you want to look away, but you can't look away because what's about to happen right now? And it was time for him to take off. I think he had to, like, run first and then pedal. And he took off, and he was going high up in the air. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. He's doing it. He's flying in the air with this self-propelled styrofoam cardboard airplane. And then it became clear that this body of water is quite long. And there's only a certain amount of time you could pedal yourself into the air like a bird before your legs get tired and you start to descend. And lo and behold, as he got to like the middle of the English Channel, you see that his legs start to get tired and he's going a little down and everyone's like, oh, here it is. This is where it gets silly. And everyone's kind of waiting for it to happen and you see that he's just right above the water. It's almost like the bottom of his feet as they're pedaling are hitting the water and everyone's just waiting for it to all go down. And then suddenly he begins to ascend. He begins to elevate. And he gets right back up to his regular cruising altitude. And everyone's amazed and people are cheering. And he stays up there and he continues and he finishes. And he gets to the other side of the English Channel. And there's applause and someone hands him a certificate or something. I don't even know who hands out certificates like that. And everyone's kind of dumbfounded. They're kind of amazed at how he pulled it off. It seemed like a foregone conclusion. This guy was going to go under. And the reporter gets to him, and he's noticeably fatigued. And he said, you know, congratulations, what a great milestone. We were rooting for you the whole time, but I think I need to ask you what probably most people are wondering right now, which is, you know, there was that time where you were about to go under, you were low, you were even touching the water, and then suddenly you lifted off again and you were able to make it across. What happened right at that moment where you were about to go down that pulled you through to the other side? He said, I'll tell you what happened. I saw something. I said, you know what? I should be more precise. I saw nothing. I saw absolutely nothing. I was at that point in the middle of the English Channel. I was about to sink into the water, and the other half of the channel was in front of me. And what I saw holding me back from me accomplishing my goal, what I saw between me and the other side of the English Channel was nothing. There was nothing there. And what that meant to me was that there was only going to be one reason why I didn't accomplish this goal, why I didn't get to my destination, and that would be me, if I just didn't do it. And whereas in other goals and other achievements, what people need to overcome are physical obstacles, are things beyond them, external to them, that they need to try and triumph over and defeat, I had no one to defeat but myself. I had to win this on my own. And once I realized that it was only me that I had to overcome, then I just told myself, okay, let's just do it. Let's just get to the other side. It's just about me doing what I want to be doing. And he accomplished his goal. This time of year is about recognizing when we're really battling against something that's external to us and when we're just making excuses, calling it something beyond me, instead of really saying, it's just me in the air. There's nothing between me and my goal, if I'm going to be perfectly honest with myself. If I can be really honest with myself, the reason why X doesn't happen in my life the way it should is just because I need to be pedaling harder. It's just because really I could be doing more. And it's not my alarm clock, and it's not what they're all saying, and it's not what expectations. It's not that. If I'm going to be really honest with myself, if I look up and I look towards where I am right now, between where I am right now and where I want to be, there's just air. It's just me and my goal. It's okay to not know what your goal is yet. But I'm sure you all can think of a few things right now, whether they're huge or very small in comparison, that you feel, okay, that's something that I could probably dedicate, probably should dedicate my time to working on in my life. And this time of the year, the beginning of your year, is for telling yourself, it's just me in the air. When you're in shul, it's just me and my sitter in the air. I don't have anyone to impress. I'm not trying to look good for anyone or anything right now. It's just me and my goal. Me and who I want to be. That's a difficult thing, because usually throughout the year we're not focused on that too much. Partially because there's a lot of distraction and there's a lot of people and texts and all sorts of things in our life that we can occupy our time with. And partially because it's not comfortable to think about how what's standing in between me and who I want to be is just me. That's not a fun thing to think about. So how do I get there? How do I get the leg strength to pedal all the way across? So I want to offer you one suggestion, and it's one last story about my kids. One of the privileges I have, or luxuries I have, of living in this central part of the country is I'm literally a 15-minute drive from the Tel Aviv beach. And my kids love the beach. It's not to love. And often in the summer, Fridays are long. We get to take them for a few hours to go have fun. And you already heard a little about my kids. They each have kind of their own thing that they're excited to do and that they spend their time doing when we get to the beach. There's one kid of mine who's obsessed with jumping into the waves as they crash up on the shore. Now, it's funny because she's like 1'7". And when a wave comes, it totally engulfs her, and water goes into every hole in her face. And then she almost, like, drowns standing up, and then she runs out. And I have to, like, get her back to normal, and then she wants to do it again. Like, that's her thing. It's really difficult as a parent to watch that happen every time. I have my other daughter who likes making castles in the sand. Along a princess theme. Definitely. Princesses involved. My son Yosef likes swimming, so he likes to like go to the shallow and do swimming right there. I have one kid who's 1 year old, so he just likes to get into trouble. And then there's Yitzchak. He's my oldest, the third grader who hates his friend Ariel, but they love each other again. And he gets out of the car and we get to the beach, and he spends every single second that we are there, from the moment we touch a grain of sand to the moment we have to leave, searching for seashells. He probably ends up with like 65 to 70 by the time we're done. I usually have to beg him, convince him to pick the 10 that are the coolest. And that's a whole long process. Every second of the beach, he is looking for seashells. Oh, Abba, look at this one. It's cool. It has a stripe. I'm like, I've seen shells. I get it. But I play along because it's you know, some of them are actually very cool, and it's nice to look for these cool things in nature. There are several different buckets of shells around my house right now that I cannot empty because they're his shells, and here he's saving them for something, and yet every time we go back to the beach the whole thing happens again. And it's just very interesting that different kids find different things that they want to do with the beach. And what's funny is that my son has a very specific mentality, and that's why he likes collecting shells. His mentality is, we're going to a place where there's literally free shells for you to pick up everywhere you look, in the water, on the sand, everywhere, and everyone's just sitting around and, like, tanning, and there's just free shells everywhere. It's like, it doesn't make sense to him why no one else is doing this. It's like there's some anomaly where people don't see that there's shells everywhere, and he does. And he's running around, and he's picking up every shell he can. And he looks at my daughter, Tzipora, running into the water, and he's like, what are you doing that for? How could that possibly be better than collecting all the shells that you could possibly want in your life? And of course, everyone else at the beach is like, why are you collecting shells? You're at a beach. Enjoy the beach. There's sun. There's water. There are water toys. There's sand. There's all sorts of fun things you can do here, and you're sitting, you're spending your whole time literally staring at sand and picking up shells that are worth nothing just because they're around. And I didn't think about it at the time, but afterwards it dawned upon me that it's perfect. It's the perfect answer to how our lives often turn out a little different than the way we want, because we show up in our lives and it's a beach, and there are lots of different things to do, and lots of them are really fun. You could go hang out with friends in the water. You could go tan. There are all of these opportunities, and they all seem perfectly normal to do at the beach. That's what everyone's doing. But then every once in a while, there's the kid or that experience, that reminder in your life, there are shells all around you for free, and you could just grab them. There are opportunities all around you for free that you can grow, that you could develop, that you could find meaning in your life, that you could contribute, that you could get closer to your goal, all around you. Everywhere you turn, free shells, everywhere. And when you begin to realize that I could spend my time getting a tan, which is literally sitting and just being slightly conscious, or I could spend my time searching for ways to get what I'm after, to become who I want to become, because those opportunities to do that are all around me, then the minute you touch the ground, the minute your feet touch the sand in your life, the minute you get there, you're going to be off and you're going to be looking around and you're going to be collecting the pieces that you need to build you, to build your life. And it's a decision. It's a decision to say, I'm going to use my time to build myself, to invest in myself. I'm going to use the opportunities around me. There's plenty of time to have fun. I'm a big endorser of having fun. But when you have opportunities like this, contribute to your own growth, to your own development, to getting to be that person that you want to be, releasing yourself from that definition, that label that you've always had, or that you feel maybe you've always have or been given, and say, I want to be different. I want to be new. I want to be 20% better than who I am right now, and nothing is holding me back from doing it, and the opportunities are all around me, and they're free. The minute I start to see the same world that I'm in, but I see it as free shells everywhere, your life can change instantly. Now, luckily you've been placed in an environment where you could literally go for days at a time where every waking minute you're doing something meaningful. It's important not to lose sight of how special that is. I started by talking about how special this place is. You literally wake up and your sleep and your eating is so that you can be strong and have energy to help other people who need you today. And so that you can pay attention and learn and develop so that when you become an adult and the head of your household, you'll know how to run your house. You interact with people that you're both gaining from and you're contributing to every moment of your day. Please don't forget that. You're on a beach and shells are everywhere. Everywhere. And if you're ever like having a day where it's just, I don't know, it feels off or you're lazy, or whatever, remember that you probably did like 70% of a meaningful day, which is around 68% of most people on Earth are doing. And that's on an off day. So you're in the perfect environment to say, if I was ever wondering what I'm capable of, who I'm capable of becoming, well, this place will show me what I'm capable of. This place will teach me, yeah, I can be an amazing giver, and I can be an unbelievable taker of knowledge and information and spirituality and religious growth. At the same time, I could literally supercharge myself. We're at the beginning of a year full of opportunities. Full of them. And we could be distracted because there are still distractions, even in this perfect environment. and we could fall back onto who we were, and we could think of, if there was traffic yesterday in my life, then there's probably going to be traffic tomorrow. And if people think I'm a horse, then maybe I'm a horse. Or we could say, today's a new day. I'm not diagnosing myself by whatever anyone thinks or thought, including myself. If I want to be someone, I could be someone. We enter Rosh Hashanah, and after all the days of saying Slichot that we're in right now, we stop. We stop detailing the things that we do wrong. We stop asking God to forgive us. We stop reminding ourselves of what the things are within that we need to change, because we suddenly get to Rosh Hashanah and we realize it's not about yesterday. It's not about what I did. This day is about right now, about what I can be moving forward. It's the first day of a new year. And I could decide that yesterday and every day before that is gone, is disappeared. No more traffic jam. I can move forward if I want to. This is your opportunity right in front of you 3 days from now. An opportunity to say, I know what happened, that my past is my past, and it probably wasn't too bad after all if you're in this room right now. But whatever it is I want to be, which is probably just better than really good already, I have everything I need right now to be that. Everything I need to be who I want to be is right here. It's just a choice. We should be zocha to have a meaningful and successful year, not just Rosh Hashanah, but year. We're at the beginning of this amazing opportunity, and this week is just the first part of it. And I hope we could continue to appreciate the opportunities we have before us every single day, build upon each day, and be able to turn around many years from now, think very big, many years from now, and say, wow, it started right here. It started when I decided to grow, to look at my whole life as an opportunity to grow. And hopefully we'll do that right here and right now. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi Yablok, for having come out. Thank you very much, Rabbi.